White Rocket Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The second pilot is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hey everybody, this is going to be my sort of stream of consciousness, immediate reaction thoughts to Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. I wanted to do something like this with Justice League about a week ago, but I realized I was seeing it so much later than pretty much everybody else that was interested in it, that it's kind of like no point in doing it anymore. So I didn't do that one, but I definitely want to do this one, because I know that, you know, there's a lot of people that are interested in this movie and are longtime fans and have been, you know, disillusioned maybe by some of the recent efforts over the last few years, pretty much starting with, well, some might argue starting with Return of the Jedi. But I had a very strong reaction to this movie, and it surprised me. And so I thought I would, put it out there for any who are interested. So I don't have a whole lot written down to talk about here. I'm just going to kind of go stream of consciousness, not a lot of premeditation. I do have a few notes, and I'll try to hit on those as we go along. So the way I'm going to do this is, first up, I'll do the non-spoiler section and talk about some things that I don't think you will mind hearing if you haven't seen the movie yet. Now, if you don't want to hear anything, why are you even watching this or listening to this, right? So go away. But I'm going to do some sort of non-spoilery stuff first, and then I'll give you a clear signal that now it is time for the spoilers. I'll let you know. You will not have to worry about that. All right, so here we go. The non-spoiler stuff. My general reaction to this movie, I liked it a lot. I liked it far more than The Force Awakens, and I'll tell you why. I liked it more than Rogue One, and I'll tell you why. I liked it better than all of the prequels, and I think that should go without saying. I know there are some folks out there, particularly younger fans, that really like the prequels. And I kind of understand that, because if your first exposure to Star Wars as a kid was seeing, you know, Phantom Menace or something, then, like, for example, my 9-year-old daughter, you know, we watched them in order, in number order, which was probably a mistake, because she thinks of Anakin as the hero of the entire series. And when we got to Star Wars and Empire and Jedi, you know, she's rooting for Darth Vader. She still thinks he's the hero. And I mean, ultimately he kind of is, because he's redeemed and he comes back around and everything. But let's be honest, for 2 3/4 movies, he's the villain. So, you know, I understand people having a different perspective if they saw them differently. You know, I was talking to somebody on Twitter just the other day about how, you know, younger fans that saw that younger fans that had access to the entire series, or certainly to the classic trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, as they say, you know, from the time they were born, they're going to see these movies differently. Because, you know, he was saying, well, you know, we could watch them in different order. We could put them in, we could watch them all 3 at once, you know, and all that. And I was like, you know, when I was a kid, you watched the one that was in the theater, period. You know, maybe a couple of years later, you know, they showed one of them on network television with commercials broken into it, which is horrible. I didn't watch that. But, you know, this is before really VCRs or anything, and so, or certainly before DVDs or anything like that. And so, you know, you kind of had to experience them in the order that they came out, and you were limited to seeing them when they were in the theater. You know, so that's a whole different world than what we have now. So I understand how some people's, sense of these movies is different from mine. I get that. But I'm, you know, very solidly on record as saying that they're Star Wars. For some of you, that's Episode 4, A New Hope. But no, they're Star Wars, and then there's the others, you know. And I think that they're kind of like Star Wars, and then the others, okay? So let's talk about Episode 8, The Last Jedi. I think to talk about The Last Jedi, without spoilers, I've got to talk a little bit about Episode 7 and compare the two. Because here was the thing. I thought Episode 7 did an excellent job of creating new characters. Okay, I thought that they brought new characters into the saga that were different, that offered something, you know, in the same way that bringing Qui-Gon into the prequel trilogy was a good thing, I think, in general terms. I mean, if you go back and look at the prequels, there are a few good things in those movies. Darth Maul's a pretty good thing, and Qui-Gon Jinn is a pretty good thing. You know, what they did with some of those things, no. And some of the other characters, and you know who I'm talking about, no. But there were a few very good things added to that prequel that were created for that prequel trilogy. And it's the same thing with The Force Awakens. I thought Dameron Poe, what little we saw of him in 7, he was interesting. He kind of had the potential to be a new young Han Solo type of character. You can kind of see the amalgams they're going for here, right? I thought that Rey, obviously, is a very, very necessary breath of fresh air because you needed a strong female lead character. You know, Star Wars has always had strong women. Princess Leia, particularly in the first movie, was, you know, she was get out of the way, grab the gun and blow a hole in the wall and jump through the down the garbage chute. You know, I mean, and certainly Amidala had her moments. And she also had some bad moments, but she had some good moments. So, or Padme, however you want to call her. So, you know, there have been a tradition of a strong female lead. And I thought Rey is at least as good, if not better, than those. Finn, I think he's a really cool character because it's interesting to see a character that crossed over from being in with the quote unquote Empire, New Order, or whatever, to being with the Rebels. And I like the idea that, and this is not really a spoiler, but in the new movie, they actually give him a couple of very brief moments where his having familiarity with the other side is useful. You know, they're thinking there, right? They're thinking, okay, what do we do with Finn in this movie? Well, he worked for the New Order, so he might have some inside information that could be useful. So that I thought that was a very good thing. They brought in the new character, Rose, who I like very much, and I'll say more about her in the spoiler section. You know, you've got the old characters like Leia and Luke, of course, and you've got and Chewie. And of course, you know, you got the new droid like BB-8, who I think they do a lot of really good stuff with BB-8. And I think, honestly, in practical terms, the best thing about BB-8 is he has a very similar personality to R2-D2, if maybe a little more feisty, a little more lively, which is good. Because I think R2-D2 was limited in that he's so static. You know, like R2-D2 is like, he's like a trash can, and then occasionally he rolls. And occasionally he pops something out and does something. But R2-D2's expressiveness, his personality, was limited by his being a glorified trash can. And I don't mean that in an insulting way at all. I mean, that's what they had to work with in 1976, 77 when they filmed it. BB-8, the great thing about him is mobility. He can zip all around, run all around, and move his head all around and do stuff. And so, you know, he's got all the stuff that R2-D2 had plus more. So I think he's been a very successful character in that way. And my daughter was going nuts over the evil version that maybe you've seen in the commercials. I won't tell you what he does or anything about him, but okay. So 7, The Force Awakens introduced some new characters, but it didn't really do much with them. I thought really that Finn and Rey were used fairly well in Force Awakens, but the overall plot of that movie, I just did not think it didn't serve those characters very well. It didn't give them a lot to do. And a lot of the secondary characters didn't get a lot to do, like Phasma, Captain Phasma. She's a really cool character, but in the tradition of Star Wars, and honestly, that's in the grand tradition of Star Wars, right? Introduce this really cool, visually interesting character, and then do almost nothing with them. Exhibit A. I'm wearing Exhibit A right now, okay? Really visually cool character, and then just kind of underwhelm us with what they do. Darth Maul, right? Could have did some pretty cool stuff, more than this guy, Boba Fett. Boba Fett, by the way, is on my shirt, those that are just listening to the audio version. Boba Fett, totally underused. Darth Maul should have been a villain for longer than just, you know, one scene in that one movie. They squandered him. So Star Wars has a tradition of introducing cool visual characters with a cool, you know, power set or something interesting about them, and then underusing them. And I thought a lot of characters in that the Force Awakens were underused or were in dumb storylines, like the whole Starkiller base thing. Dumb storyline, right? So Kylo Ren. I thought Kylo Ren could have been an interesting character, but I just was not overwhelmed with the level of sophistication that went into his character and his writing, the writing of him. Okay, more about that. All right. I'll say this in the non-spoiler section. The new characters are back and they get to do stuff. It's cool. And they get to pretty much all do cool stuff. They get to use their whatever it is about them. They get to be interesting. This movie is far superior to The Force Awakens in terms of letting them do stuff. And so I give it very high marks for that. There have been so many recent science fiction movies that they have the actors, they have the director maybe, they have the visuals certainly, the effects, the money, all that, and they just don't get the story right. Prometheus is the big one, right? There was so much about Prometheus to love, except that script. Oh, gosh. So dumb. Star Trek Into Darkness. And what did those two have in common? What's his name, the screenwriter? The guy that worked on Lost. I can never remember his name. I don't want to remember his name. Star Trek Into Darkness. Great visuals, great effects, great cast. Terrible story. Terrible script. Terrible writing. And, of course, The Force Awakens. Star Wars Episode 7. Everything about it was beautiful, amazing, exciting. Except, for the most part, the script, the writing. So, I think we can now also say, as I continue in the non-spoiler section for just a couple more minutes longer, I think we can now say that this new Star Wars trilogy is not classic Star Wars any more than the prequels were classic Star Wars. Each trilogy has its own flavor. And just because they brought back Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford for some of these, for, you know, in different ways for these movies, doesn't make them classic Star Wars. This is a new trilogy for a new generation with a new generation of actors, and that brings with it its highs and its lows in different degrees in different movies. But it doesn't feel the same as the classic ones. It's trying to be more sprawling and do lots of little set pieces and all in a different way than the original trilogy did, and certainly a different way than Star Wars did, because Star Wars was one story with a beginning, a middle, and the end, and a very strong through narrative all the way through, which would only take asides to show the villains, really, right? I mean, Star Wars, you have the heroes, and their stuff is happening to bring them together. They get together, and then you have asides of what the villains are doing in reaction to this, and you go all the way through the end, and you blow up the Death Star, and everybody gets the medal, and the end, boom, one story. That's why I love Star Wars so much. It has a story, a single story, a straight-through action line, and it's a good story. It's a great story. It's an edge-of-your-seat story. And Empire doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end, and kind of, I call Empire a series of unfortunate events in a galaxy far, far away. They may be very fascinating, exciting events, but that doesn't make for a story. That makes for a series of events. Return of the Jedi had the potential to be great, except that it rehashes some of Star Wars with another Death Star. We'll see that again. And Muppets and Ewoks, right? So Jedi has parts of it that are great and parts of it that are just so disappointing. So this is a different trilogy, and it's got different disappointments. It's got different things that are really cool about it. So shall we talk about spoilers now? I guess I've been talking for 13 minutes or so, so let's go ahead and ooga. Spoilers coming. Avert thine eyes. Look away. Okay. So if you're ready for the spoilers, couple of things that jumped out at me about this movie. One was you have after the opening crawl, which has a very different flavor than anything from the original trilogy, but still that same structure, and that was good. Is you have, and I'm not going to go through the whole movie, but just a couple of things from the beginning jump out to me. That opening bit was kind of odd, where you have a British actor, Imperial commander, general, admiral, whatever. Hall or whatever his name was, starts with an H, one syllable. Prancing around the bridge, doing his villainous monologue to Dameron and Poe. And Poe acts like he can't hear him. And stretches that joke out and stretches it out. Now, I'm sitting there in the theater going, this is Guardians of the Galaxy. This is Chris Pratt. This is Star-Lord. This is not Star Wars. And that kind of put me off for a minute. But then I realized, you know what, though? He's the Han Solo character of this trilogy in some ways, right? The rebel flyboy. Doesn't do well with authority. Doesn't take any crap. Doesn't do well with orders. He's the rebel flyboy. But Han Solo, think about the detention cell block scene where Han was doing a conversation kind of evocative of that. You know, large reactor leak, very dangerous. You know, that whole business. That was kind of similar. So a lot of this just keeps jumping out at me that a lot of what this new trilogy, these two movies so far, 7 and 8, have done is they've gone through 4, 5, and 6. I'll just call them. Not what I like to call them, but for briefness sake, it's like the screenwriters have gone through 4, 5, and 6 with a fine tooth comb, and they've dug out little nuggets of 4, 5, and 6, and they've changed them just enough that they are new scenes with new characters, but they still call back something from the old one, right? And it's all the way through 7 and all the way through 8 are these callbacks where they are, I don't want to say rehashing, but it almost is rehashing. You know, it's almost plagiarizing in a way, but it's not. I mean, it's very close. But that's one of them, right? You have the rebel, cocky, funny flyboy having a funny communication over radio or whatever with the Imperial officer. So, you know, there's that. So I don't have a problem with that as much as I did at first, because I think that what made it stand out was it was the very first scene. That if it had happened later in the movie, where, you know, he just has that funny conversation, we'd have laughed it off. Oh, funny scene in the, you know, 30 minutes in the movie. But because it's the opening scene, and the opening scene of a Star Wars movie is not really usually a joke, that was off-putting at first. In retrospect, 2.5 hours of movie later, I'm okay with it. Let me go ahead and mention up here, I think the biggest problem I have with the movie, and I'll talk a little bit about the problems, and I'll talk about some of the good things, okay, and then we'll wrap up. I was talking on Twitter this morning, and this is the Saturday morning after I watched it Friday night, and we'll talk about the box office it's doing in a minute, too. And I was talking a little bit on Twitter about it, and one of my Twitter friends, Earl the Prowler, an Auburn guy, AU Wishbone listener, I believe, he sent me in his view on basically one question about the movie, which is sort of, I guess, the listener question segment for this show. And I have a computer pop-up thing. There, okay. So I thought I would just read it, because I think he puts it very well. And I'll do my best to address it as best I can. Okay, he says, first off, I loved the movie overall. There was a lot to process, and I think a second viewing will make a lot of it more clear. I agree. I'm looking forward to seeing it again, which is not something I said about the last 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. He continues, my biggest struggle is with Luke, and specifically the scene they showed multiple times of him confronting young Ben Solo. My mind has a hard time resolving that scene with Return of the Jedi Luke. This is a guy who said, I can't kill my own father, an evil father he barely knew and was convinced he could turn back to the light. When he defeated him, he even threw his lightsaber away and refused to finish the job. That's true. However, Earl says, when he confronts Ben Solo, he sees something so bad, he instantly thinks, I need to kill him immediately. Even if it was just a second of weakness, as we kind of find out, you know, in a later later bit. This was his best friend's son, whom he had known since birth. We are to assume at that point, Luke was instantly convinced he was irredeemable, even more so than a Vader who exterminated Jedi for 20 years. The same Ben Solo who 15 years later in The Force Awakens has to keep resisting the call to light. Okay? And he continues, this is his last paragraph, "I'm not saying Luke should have been the perfect, unflawed hero who jumps right into his expected role of galactic savior without hesitation, but this scene seems to conflict with what has already been established about Luke in the film. To me, it would have been better to say he saw the darkness building, tried to stop it, but just couldn't do it." Let me say that sentence again, because I did a poor line reading there. "To me, it would have been better to say that Luke saw the darkness building, tried to stop it, but just couldn't do it, than to say he got caught trying to murder him in his sleep. The whole reason Ben was at Luke's school in the first place was because everyone could sense darkness in Ben, and they wanted him to train with Luke." Now, he says, "Would love to know your thoughts. Keep up the great work. Thanks, and War Eagle, Earl." Well, thank you, Earl. I appreciate that, because I wanted to go ahead and just read your whole statement, because I think you do a far better job than I could have done of explaining and laying out the issue there. And I'll say, to a certain degree, I agree with you. And here's the thing. We got multiple tellings visually, right, of that scene from different people's points of view toward the end of the movie. And when I realized that was what was happening, right, that first we get a view, and it's, I think, a bad view. And then later you get a view and it's like, well, here's why. And you keep getting addendums to it and everything. When I realized that we were going to get a series of explanations that were increasingly either saying Luke is the devil, look how he did me wrong, or Luke was a hero and he had a moment of weakness, but he was trying to, you know, resolve it and trying to fix it and everything. When I realized that that's what they were doing, okay, I started rooting for the last version to make me feel good about Luke again, right? You're rooting. You're like, okay, come on, be a good explanation. He misunderstood something. Be a good explanation. And I would say that the final explanation we get, which is that he sees, I believe the last explanation we get is that he sees Ben / Kylo Ren lying there, and he freaks out, pulls out his lightsaber, and then he realizes, no, I can't do that. I got to fix him. But Ben wakes up and sees him, and blah, 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 and boom. I feel like it wasn't what you and I wanted, Earl. I get that. I agree. But it was better than where I was, you know, initially. Oh my gosh, he just went in to kill him. So I agree that I think what we're arguing is that out of character, right? I mean, I think what it really comes down to is when they wrote the script for this movie, did they write Luke out of character? And to be honest, I don't know that you could have told the story they were trying to tell in this movie and write him differently than that. So you're kind of in a box, right? On the one hand, you want to be true to the character. And I'm a very well-known proponent of making the story fit the character and not twisting characters unrealistically to fit a predetermined story. See Prometheus, see Star Trek Into Darkness, see so many stories we've gotten over the years, the whole Skrull secret invasion in Marvel Comics a few years ago, the Civil War story in Marvel, which they totally repaired and fixed perfectly in Captain America, the Civil War movie. I'm a big fan of making the story fit the characters, not having the characters shoehorned into a story and acting out of character. So I agree with you to a certain point, and I think that's probably the biggest single flaw of the movie. I do think that's probably the biggest single flaw of the movie. But I think that they mitigate it enough, okay? They mitigate it enough in the subsequent versions that I can live with it, I think. If I see it a second time, maybe I'll change my mind. But see, when I see it the second time, I'll know where they're going with it. We'll see. But yeah, I wish it could have worked better. I really do wish it could have worked better. And compared to the problems I've had with every Star Wars movie since Empire, pretty much, it's not a deal breaker for me. Another thing about this movie, all of the Star Wars movies, to one degree or another, feel almost like anthologies in one box. You know, in other words, like Star Wars had the Tatooine part, it had the Death Star part, it had the battle part, and a few other things. Empire had the ice planet part, it had the Dagobah swamp part, it had the Cloud City part, you know, and other things. You know, and you know, Return of the Jedi has the Endor part, the Death Star part, the Tatooine Jabba part, right? Each of the Star Wars movies, particularly the early ones, felt like several very discrete stories stacked together. Okay, this movie feels very much like that. And this gets me to another thing. I was going to allude to this in the non-spoiler part, but I forgot, so I'll mention it now, is that this, you know, we all agreed that Episode 7, The Force Awakens, felt a lot like Star Wars. And by that, I'm going to have to say A New Hope, okay? I don't mean Star Wars in general, because it kind of did and kind of didn't feel like Star Wars in general, but it did feel a lot like the story of Episode 4, quote-unquote. Well, you know, 20 minutes into this movie, I'm sitting there going, okay, this is both somehow Return of the Jedi and The Empire Strikes Back, kind of in opposite order in a way. All the way through the Last Jedi, all the way through, you get very strong elements from Return of the Jedi, and then you get strong elements from The Empire Strikes Back. And you get them both in the same movie, including getting somewhat of a resolution to a lot of that in this movie, which is, I think, very interesting. So I'm gonna address that. I want to address the characters as they fit into this story better, okay? So really quick. This movie, to compare it to those other two, it's got a very similar scene toward the end with the assault on the rebel base with the giant door, right? That's very evocative of the snow battle, except it's salt instead of snow. Didn't really get the understand the whole thing about the red, but whatever. It's got the evacuation of a rebel base when the bad guys, Star Destroyers, are attacking, like we saw in the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back. It's got the rebels losing and being on the run, like in The Empire Strikes Back. It's got Yoda, like Empire Strikes Back. It's got several other things like that I'm forgetting. Then there's the parts of it that are like Return of the Jedi, including certainly the scene with Snoke in the throne room. I mean, that is pure Return of the Jedi, just with a different flavor and a different set of events. I was surprised. I got to mention that what happens to Snoke in this movie was just one of several moments in this movie where I said to myself, I don't know. I honestly, right now, I haven't looked. I don't know if the screenwriters were the same for this movie as for The Force Awakens. In a way, it feels the same. In a way, it doesn't. But if it was the same screenwriter, I give them credit for being willing to step away from what they were doing in the first one and do something different here, because here's why. A lot of the stuff that seemed to be set up very big and very dramatic in the first one but didn't really work, it's like the screenwriters of this one, of 8, they came in and said, screw it. Take a sledgehammer to it, right? It's like in Episode 7, they were setting Snoke up as this big, scary, mysterious presence. You don't know, is he a giant? You don't know who he is. You don't know what he is. There's this whole mystery behind him. They're setting it all up, leave it hanging there. What is Snoke? Ooh, what is he? And then in this movie, they kind of said, he's like a poor man's emperor. Kill him quickly. And he's dead. Boom. Really? So this is yet another example, along with Boba Fett and Darth Maul and all the others, of create an interesting new character, put some mysteries around him, and then kill him. But, you know, honestly, I didn't have a big problem with that, because I thought he went out in a very fun... I liked how he went out. I thought it was cool. I liked the twisted motives. I mean, let me talk about characters now, because that gets me into Kylo Ren, okay? I think that... I've made the point now, right, that they copy a lot of Empire and they copy a lot of Return of the Jedi, and I'm not sure if they were doing things to deliberately kind of poke a finger in the eye of Episode 7, or if this is where they were going all along. I don't know. That's one thing I'd like to know the answer to, and I'm curious about it. Okay, but now let me go into the characters, because this is really the heart of what I wanted to say about this movie, is that they use the characters much better, okay? I did not care at all for Kylo Ren, Ben Solo in the first movie, I thought he was ridiculous. I thought he was silly. I just didn't think he had a lot of redeeming characteristics. I thought if this is supposed to be the lead villain of a new trilogy, wow, I'm not getting it at all. What they did with him in this movie, though, was subtle. It was nuanced. It had multiple layers to it. It was far more sophisticated. So again, if it's the same writers as wrote the first one, I mean seven, right? Episode seven, I give them credit. They got better. And if this was different writers, then good. Good job, Disney, Lucas, you know, whoever, going out and getting different writers. Because he was nuanced. He had different layers to him. He was up to different things. He was fooling us. You couldn't quite tell what side he was ever on, or if he was changing, or exactly what he was doing, or why. And it was in the same style and flavor as Luke and Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi, and The Empire Strikes Back. And yet it was different. That's what I liked about this movie, and what I wanted from a Star Wars movie that's going to try to harken back like this. I want it to evoke things from the previous movies and from this universe that we have warm, fuzzy feelings about and good memories and nostalgia about, but yet use them in original ways. Do something different with them. Blowing up a big thing that blows up planets or stars is not original enough. But having Kylo Ren, who in the first movie was just a petulant baby who pitches tantrums, and that was kind of funny, but other than that, having him in this movie have multiple motivations and he's shifting allegiances and stuff, that was good. I give him full credit for that. I really liked that. And I liked his relationship with Rey. When it first started happening, I'm like, okay, he's going to be, you know, mentally communicating with Rey. And I don't really want to see this. It's going to be, they're going to just be fussing each other. Like, you should join me. You should leave me alone. You should join me. You should leave me alone. You know, that's going to be boring, but it didn't do that. It didn't. It became more interesting because she started having sympathy for him. And I thought, okay, so she's going to pull him over. That's interesting. And then you get the reversal again that no, he's, you know, trying to pull, but not for. He was trying to pull her over, but not like Darth Vader with the Emperor for him. He was trying to pull her over to help him and kill Snoke. So that was interesting. It was kind of a reversal in a way of the sequence from Return of the Jedi. So I thought that was very, very good. I'll mention the very, very ending too before I forget about it, because it wasn't huge, but it was very powerful. I was like, where are they going? Because they reach a natural ending point in this movie, right? Luke has become one with the Force, and, you know, everything's kind of settled down. The rebels have escaped and all that. And then you get that last tacked-on scene in the stable, and the little boy, and he has that ring, the rebel ring that he got, I guess, from Rose, and he walks out, and he's got a broom showing that he's like a slave, you know, a servant or whatever. And then he turns it around and points it up like a lightsaber, and he's looking up the stars, and that's where it ends. And I thought that was so effective because it was a really nice moment, a good visual moment, a good emotional moment, a good callback to the earlier part of the movie, and a callback to the fact that almost all of the old generation of rebels are gone. It was almost metaphorical and symbolic in a way of the fact that with Han Solo dead, and Luke was now gone, and we know that Carrie Fisher in real life has passed away, it made a really nice moment for us to say, the old generation has now done their thing, and we love them, and they're gone, and we're looking to a new generation to step forward and replenish the ranks of the rebels. So in that one little visual moment at the very end of the movie, they sort of encapsulated this whole new trilogy. And I thought that was brilliant. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. A few other things in the movie I want to mention. I thought that the other characters. I loved the character of Rose. I thought she was really good. I thought her chemistry with Finn was very good, and they have a neat relationship, and that was awesome. And I liked the two of them going off on their own little mission, which was really cool. I thought that Benicio del Toro, right? I always get him, his name confused with the director of Hellboy. I don't know. Anyway, whichever one of them was in this movie, because they both have similar names. He played the Collector in Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought he was terrible. I didn't like him at all in that. I thought he was excellent as the programmer guy. I thought he did a really good job with that. I thought that was good. And I liked that character. I liked that whole subplot with them going off to the gambling casino world. That was cool. And that was something we hadn't seen in Star Wars before. But it fit, right? It totally made sense that there would be war profiteers at Casino Royale, right? I totally got it. It was good. I liked, I thought Ren has a great classic Star Wars story, very Lukean, right? Very Leia-ian through this movie. I thought that was great. I thought BB-8 does some really cool stuff. I'm really come warmed around to him. I thought he's a very good addition to the cast. I thought Chewie has some classic Chewie moments, and he has those little the little bird thingies that scream that are tearing apart the ship. He got, because we, you know, some of our fondest memories of the early movies are when Chewie gets annoyed by creatures, like when the Ugnaughts, I think it was, in Empire, bother him, and he's and screaming at him, you know, or whatever. It's always funny when Chewbacca gets irritated by something and starts at it. That's funny. That's good stuff. There's a lot of good comedy in this movie, but it doesn't overpower things. I like the story arc involving that redheaded British, you know, Imperial officer and his whole deal. I thought he was funny and good in it. Everybody gets something good to do. Princess Leia gets some cool stuff to do, including flying through outer space. That was pretty amazing. Everybody gets something pretty cool to do. I don't want to go on too much longer here. We got to wrap things up. Very quickly. Anybody else I want to mention? I know I'm leaving out a ton of really good stuff that I wanted to talk about, but, you know, you get on camera and you start thinking and you just blank out on stuff. But just to kind of sum it up, I thought all the characters had something good to do. It kept them all busy, kept them all involved, didn't carry them off on things that were not really pertinent. We didn't have weird, you know, excursions that were irrelevant, like in some. Had great action scenes, a couple of good space battles. The scene running through the casino and off the cliffs and the fields and everything I thought was very good with the big animals. That was very nice. I don't know. I'm sure I'm forgetting a ton of things, but it all struck me very good. Let's give a final rating to this movie. I was going to mention the box office. Here's some box office information. It is looking like it's going to take in around $215 million in North America this weekend, $45 million on Thursday preview, the second largest Thursday night preview total ever after The Force Awakens had 57. Wow. It brought in $104 million on Friday, and will probably add another $100 million the rest of the weekend. That'd take it higher than 215, I would have to tell you guys that are doing this. The total gross will make The Last Jedi the fourth film in domestic box office history to make over $200 million in its first weekend, joining The Force Awakens, Jurassic World, and The Avengers. And it's making significantly more money than Rogue One. Okay, so there's the box office. Well, all right. So that is my take on Star Wars Episode VIII, The Last Jedi. I think right now, and I am notorious for liking movies better right after I see them and then deciding over time that I like them less, right? Because when you first see them, everything's shiny and fresh and the stuff you like stands out and you haven't had a chance to dwell on the stuff you didn't like as much. So maybe I'll like it less over time. I really liked The Force Awakens at first, and I like it less and less and less over time. But for reasons that I could see at the time. This one, though, I really, really liked it. It's a much better effort. Is it perfect? No. But, you know, Star Wars was virtually perfect. The original Star Wars was virtually perfect in my eyes. There's never been one since then that's lived up to that. None of them. This one is, I think, probably fourth. I do like a lot of Return of the Jedi better than this movie, but as a whole, this movie has less weak places than Return of the Jedi. So it's battling Return of the Jedi for third, probably going to end up fourth once I let all the dust settle. I guess I would, if Star Wars is a perfect 10, Empire for me is an 8, Return of the Jedi is a 7. 7.5. I guess this one is 7. It's competing in decimal points with Return of the Jedi. I mean, there's parts of Return of the Jedi I like better than Empire than that I like better than any part of Empire Strikes Back. There are parts of Return of the Jedi I like less than any part of Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back is just a steady, for me, like a steady 8 all the way across the board. It never goes great like Star Wars, but it never goes terrible like some of the others, right? It's just kind of a steady 8. Star Wars is a steady 10. Empire's a steady 8. Jedi's like, oh, it's a 9. Oh, it's a 4. Oh, it's a 9. Oh, it's a 4, right? So this movie is kind of like that. It's like two mountain ranges superimposed over each other. The peaks and valleys don't match up, but they both average out around a 7-something. So am I this excited over a 7? Yeah, because it's been a long time since we had a Star Wars movie that was that good. It really has. So, all right, I will... the audio rocket will get on out of here, the White Rocket Podcast, for another episode, and for you on video, because I have no video editing ability, so I'm just going to end it. We'll see you guys next time. Be sure to visit www.whiterocketbooks.com and www.plexico.net and check out our other podcasts, our other shows, our other videos. We're on YouTube, White Rocket TV, I believe. And if you want to become a supporter through Patreon, there's links on www.plexico.net. All right. So the rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode. Let me find the red button. There it is. And we'll see you guys down the road. Bye-bye.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.